Hello and welcome to another episode of Adventures in .NET. I am Sean Kleber, your host, and with me today is your Caleb Wells co-host. It's a little off for me today. It's been a long week.
So. It is Friday afternoon, and right, we work really hard at our jobs to pay the bills, and we do this for fun. And sometimes we're a little fried, so I could be Caleb Wells' co-host. I'm cool with that. Hey y'all.
Hey y'all. Yeah, the sun is out, but I've been inside, so it's driving me crazy. But that means that yard work is coming up, so that I'm not too
already down here
excited about.
Yeah.
All right. So our guest today is Matt Elin. Welcome, Matt.
Thanks for having me. Glad to be here.
Oh, glad to have you.
Did you work your tail off to get that senior developer gig just to realize that senior dev doesn't actually mean dream job? I've been there too. My first senior developer job was at a place where all of our triumphs were the bosses and all the failures were ours. The second one was a great place to continue to learn and grow, only for it to go under due to poor management. And now I get job offers from great places to work all the time. Not only that, but the last job interview I actually sat in was a discussion about how much my podcast had helped the people interviewing me. If you're looking for a way to get into your dream job, then join our Dev Heroes Accelerator. Not only will we help you get the kind of exposure that makes you attractive to your dream employer, but you'll be able to ask them for top dollar as well. Check it out at devheroesaccelerator.com.
So we first like to start out with kind of an introduction and who you are, what you do, and kind of how you got into software development. Why don't you start there?
Sure. So I'm an instructor at Tech Elevator over in Columbus, Ohio, a boot camp throughout the northeastern United States, but kind of have a growing remote community presence throughout the United States as well. So we teach software development in C#, Java, JavaScript technologies, Vue.js, things like that. As far as my background prior to that, I've been doing that for about a year now. But before that, I've been working primarily with .NET technologies, JavaScript front-end technologies, a lot of Angular, a little bit of Vue, TypeScript, things like that. I've been working mostly for smaller startups, helping them build software as a service applications, grow to scale, get acquired, reacquired, things like that. I've had the privilege of working with .NET since it's been in beta 2 and beyond. So I've been following C# and F# and VB for quite some time now. And it's been fun riding that wave just throughout my career. As far as how I got into programming, my dad was an actuary, and so he had an early IBM PC in the house, and I remember seeing some of those old Sierra Adventure games running on that thing, and it got me really interested in what a computer could do, and so I started tinkering with it and tinkering with GW and QBasic programs.
Lotus 1-2-3?
but I didn't care about that as a kid. So I started tinkering with these computer programs like Nibbles and the like, and just trying to see what I could do with the code and what things I could do. And my high school and grade school and college years were all recreational programming. And eventually I caught on that I could do this for fun, or not just for fun, but for pay. And that's kind of been my story of learning programming and learning that I love it.
I was going to say, I think Sean and I have similar stories, right? Mm-hmm. I've done the thing of where my dad got us a 286. Well, before that we had Texas Instruments, but an actual PC mm-hmm. in my teens. And I remember going through DOS and just listing out all the commands and just trying them to see what they did, which didn't always work out that well. So with Tech Elevator, would you consider yourself a boot camp for aspiring developers?
Yeah, we are a boot camp.
Okay,
boot camps, there's a wide variety of quality to various boot camps, and there's a lot of factors that go into that. But I've been interested in this boot camp in particular since working with graduates about 4 years ago and finding how much I mentored them. I enjoyed mentoring them, and enjoyed their desire to learn and grow. And so I kind of kept tabs on the program for about 4 years prior to joining on as an instructor. So for me, it was a very deliberate decision of I'm going to start investing more and more into speaking, writing, communication skills, and things like that. If I wanted to do this during the back half of my career. And I finally decided to pull the trigger last year. And I'm glad I did.
You know, we've had discussions in multiple podcasts about, I think we brought up boot camps and the value of a college education and certifications and things of that nature.
Yep.
I think for someone who's got the ability or the aptitude for development, I think boot camps are definitely a viable option and may work better for you, because by the time you get out of 4 years of college, a lot of the tech that you've learned, if it wasn't already obsolete, will have become obsolete, right?
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, and that aptitude thing is really important, because it's not for everybody. And so I think a good boot camp is going to deny, you know, more people than it accepts. And I think that's one of the things that we do really well, is we are honest with people who are trying to come into the program, because it's really hard. We load our students down with homework, especially early on. And we're really pushing them, not just to learn the concepts, but to be comfortable coding everything. Because there's so many different facets of learning a program. You have to understand what all these things are. You have to understand how, you know, what the tools are, what the errors mean. Like, oh my goodness, the kinds of compiler errors that you see in C#, like not all code paths return a value. It's like, well, what are you talking about? There's no way that this doesn't return, but the compiler doesn't see it, right? And we're like focusing specifically on .NET. You know, we got 20 years of progress here. And you look at the incremental progress that Microsoft makes every 6 months, and it's insane. The amount of new features and releases and the like that are coming out, frameworks that come and go, and libraries that come, and it's a massive amount for anybody to keep up with, let alone get into the field. So it's a really challenging thing. But beyond just understanding and knowing these things, it's another set of muscles entirely to start building something from scratch, right? And so we try to help our students with all aspects of that, as well as, you know, the technical interviews. Like, that's hard.
Yeah, it seems like anymore, things are getting even faster. You know, the time frame between C# 7, C# 8, now C# 9, that's getting like rapid fast.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, one common thing about a lot of developers is that liking to learn. And I think if anybody's out there looking to get into development and running software, if you don't like to learn, it's not that good of a career choice for you, because it's going to always change and you got to keep learning.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's conversations I've had with my brothers and friends of mine who are not developers, right? I learn something new every week, and I may learn a framework or two every year, or, right, as Sean said, C# 8 had a ton of features and enhancements, like the nullable stuff.
Yep.
Right? That you may not be using in your current development, but you definitely want to be aware of if the need arises, right?
And even the tools we're used to are changing. Like C# is becoming more and more functional and functional programming oriented. And
my boss writes books on C#, and he's actually skipping C# 9 because it was just so fast. So he wrote his book, came out on C# 8, and by the time it actually got out, C# 9 was out there, and everybody wanted to learn that. So now he's going, so I'm just going to jump to C# 10.
Yeah.
I get that. Yeah, right. Writing a book is not an easy task.
Oh, no. I'm there right now. I'm trying to finish a project of my own.
So what's your book about?
So I am trying to put together a very beginner-friendly guide to software scalability and architecture and things like that. So talking about horizontal scalability, vertical scalability, APIs, databases, microservices, you know, like, not how do you do this, but what are these things and what roles do they play? Like, I found myself wanting like a really accessible thing that I can give to a newer developer and just help them understand a wide variety of things out there. And I couldn't find anything I liked. So that was sort of the gap that I'm trying to fill with this.
Cool. So, you know, when it comes to that development, you got me thinking of a question. I'm interested in your opinion. I know the term full stack developer gets thrown around a good bit. There really are very few people who are truly full stack. Do you suggest to your students that they focus on the front end business logic, the database layer, that they pick one, back end, front end, or, you know, that they actually specialize in an area, or that they are more broad and can do a bit of everything? I'm assuming with your boot camp, you have to do a bit of everything to get through the boot camp. What's your opinion on that?
Well, we try to build full stack developers who are familiar with every aspect of things, not mobile development, mind you. So you're calling full stack somebody who's going to build a mobile app as well. We don't do that. But unless you're building it in JavaScript. But we are exposing everybody to kind of the core of programming using C# or Java, and then databases, relational databases in particular, SQL, JavaScript, and Vue.js, just to give them exposure to all of these aspects of things. Our words for our students are, we want you to get a job. We want you to get a job in programming. We want you to enjoy your job and do well at it. We don't want to take options off the table for a student to pursue a job. You know, so we're not trying to make somebody specifically a back-end developer. They might gravitate towards that, and that's fine. But we're trying to give people the ability to pursue most jobs in the software industry for an entry-level developer. And
gotcha.
In terms of generalization and specialization, you know, people ask us all the time. It's one of those things that the students are looking at, like, well, what do I want to do? You know, it's going to change. Just wait a few years and what you do changes. You might be a specialist in something and that thing goes away. I used to be a Silverlight specialist, you know.
I'm sorry.
I enjoyed it, actually.
We've all been there.
Yeah. Especially in the Microsoft world. I love Microsoft, but they do kill things pretty quickly.
I was a Flash specialist long time ago when I was actually more of a designer, the front, specializing front end stuff. So I'm right there with
and
you.
And I'm still a web forms developer. So.
Yes. Yes, he is. I'm whether he wants to be or not.
Yeah. Yeah. So let's get back a little bit to the sure. Compare bootstrap versus self-taught versus college. So how long is a typical boot camp class? I think it's a bootstrap, but
yeah,
that's just because I'm kind of in that mindset.
It's Friday afternoon, right?
Yeah.
So ours are 14 weeks. That's about average from what I've seen, but I'm on the teaching side of things, right? I'm not in the market research side of things. I'm not looking at our competitors. I'm not looking at a lot of things. I'm trying to get people to learn how to program, right? So for us, it's 14 weeks. And for what I've seen, that's fairly typical, but I can't make a blanket statement and say that it actually is. I do feel that it was better than my own education in many aspects. I have a bachelor's of science in computer information systems, but you have to be good at an accelerated learning pace if you're going to go through a bootcamp, right? Not everybody can do an accelerated learning. It's not for everybody. It's not for everybody with everything going on in their lives, right? Additionally, there's a lot of benefits that college gives you beyond just the core technologies. Colleges are going to teach you writing, mathematics. They're going to give you time to be an adult, right? There's a lot of value in that. So a lot of our students are actually people who have degrees in something and they want to change their job. They want to change their futures, really. And so we're giving people kind of a second chance at a career into something that they think that they might be a little bit more suited for.
Yeah, I went to college too, and I get a lot of benefit out of the business classes that I took and
yep.
economics and all that kind of stuff. Because then I can understand the customer that I'm working with better and what their interests are rather than just purely from a technical point of view.
Yep.
And absolutely. See, I went to college, but it's the opposite of Sean. I did graphic design, right? And didn't have to worry about the business stuff and writing papers, right? It was just, you know, fun playing around, moving pixels around, right? For 3.5 years. And I actually got into development through basically a job opportunity and on the job training.
Mm.
Right. And of course, boot camp is, like you said, it's like an accelerated version of that. And it's interesting. I've actually had a couple of people reach out to me on LinkedIn in the past 6 months that they completed a boot camp and they were looking for, you know, an opportunity or to see if my employer was hiring. And, you know, at this point, my employer needs very specific skill sets or high level developers. Mm. So we're not, but I kept up with them on LinkedIn and both of them have gotten hired in the last couple of months, which is great. So
in 14 weeks, can you take somebody that's never written a program at all and get them to a certain point? Or is it best that they have some sort of background of tinkering around and doing some code and that kind of thing?
We absolutely can. Yeah. Now you're probably going to succeed more or rise to a higher level if you have prior experience, but we take people who have, you know, we've demonstrated that they have the aptitude for these concepts and we take them through from start to finish and we make them, you know, the best version of them that they can be by the end of that period. Now, if you come into the program, you already know a lot of the basics of programming for loops and variables and things like that. you can cruise through the first few weeks and then maybe have a hard time once you get to the newer concepts, because you suddenly have to learn and it can be almost like hitting a wall. But those folks with a little bit more experience, they often have a little bit more time for side projects, a little bit more time for recreational learning during bootcamp, versus somebody who's, you know, brand new to things and maybe doesn't come that naturally to them. They can be doing, you know, 60-hour weeks at times. Like, it can be pretty intense. But we tell our students to compare themselves to themselves. And there's often a lot of value that somebody with a non-technical background can bring to an organization. You know, you have somebody with some really amazing accomplishments in other fields, and you add some technical skills on top of that, they're now all of a sudden a really attractive developer analyst to somebody, for example.
So why such an accelerated pace? You know, 14 weeks, that's really fast. And why not slow it down a little bit and give them a chance to absorb more and, you know, really not stress out so bad?
You know,
I imagine you might have a number of dropouts because it's just too fast.
It's not as fast, it's not as many as you would think. It's actually somewhat rare in my experience. But I've actually not asked myself that question, why this pace? One of the advantages of it is that they are really immersed in the materials. But yeah, it's a decent question. I've not asked myself that.
Yeah. I mean, the other option, I mean, there's kind of an option in between, you know, you got your self-learning, which is kind of your own pace. Mm-hmm. So boot camp, which is, you know, accelerated. Mm-hmm. And in between boot camp and like a four-year degree, you got to have like two-year degrees. So community colleges and things like that. So that's another option that I've kind of pointed a lot of people for. So if you don't want to spend 4 or 5 years learning, you know, look at 2 years. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's a little more, you know, accomplishable.
Yeah. And there's also the self-taught route too. You know, a lot of my own experience came from self-taught. That by the time I was in college, they were just teaching me stuff I already knew and often knew past the extent that they taught it, which felt a little bit like a waste of time and money. But at the time, boot camps weren't as, they weren't as accepted as a venue for getting into the field. And that's been improving quite drastically for the last 10 years.
So we all know the application process for college, right? And whether you get accepted. What is your application process for a boot camp, and how do you determine someone's aptitude for this?
So for us, again, I'm not a market expert. You know, I'm just a guy who teaches programming. For us, we have students take an aptitude test, which we're actually very proud of. We've done a lot of research into that to make sure it's non-biased in terms of ethnicity, upbringing, backgrounds, etc. So it's a test about programming skills without being about programming, which is interesting. So we'll have students take a mini aptitude test and see, hey, does it look like you're going to have the aptitude? And then we'll have a conversation with them, have them take a longer form one, and then have behavioral interviews as well. For us, we have a lot of focus on both the behavioral aspect of things and professional skills and the technical side, because we want you to leave there and be able to get that job. And not having the technical aptitude or not having the professionalism needed to get that first job will, you know, prevent that. So we kind of teach you both technology and business skills, which is kind of cool.
That's great. Yeah, yeah, that's awesome.
But we also have a lot of pre-work coming into the program, and, you know, students are kind of, we're trying to equalize the footing that people come into on day one, right? Give you some basic exposure to HTML, CSS, JavaScript, things like that, Git, before we teach it, because we'll teach it again, but it's not your first exposure to it, right? And now you can ask questions intelligently and you're not as overwhelmed. You know, our goal is to help every student succeed and to take the students who are going to succeed.
So is it more common to have students that are fresh out of high school or students that are looking to switch careers?
Most of our students are looking to switch careers. We very, very rarely take students right out of high school.
That makes sense, right? I mean, if you're coming out of high school, you still got some growing up to do, for lack of a better term, right? And I can definitely see switching to this, you know, another career path is a viable option, especially for people in industries that are scaling down or they've got fewer jobs, right? You're stretched, and development is not going anywhere anytime soon. The language you're using might, but development itself is not.
Yeah.
So you said You've been working for Tech Elevator for about a year, but you've done mentoring and training prior to that.
Yep.
How was your transition from focusing on development to teaching development?
It was gradual. I mean, it had an interesting trigger, which we can get to if you want. but once I decided to start focusing on that, you know, it was gradual. It was like, hey, it's not even part of my formal responsibilities. I'm just going to talk to the newer developers. I'm going to help them through. I'm going to teach them the things that they want to teach. And then I thought, you know what? I really like this aspect of my job. I might even like this better than building new things. And so I sought out an opportunity to lead a team. And then I, you know, served as a manager, and I really enjoyed that. Honestly, I didn't serve as a manager as long as I wanted to. An opportunity opened up at Tech Elevator, and that was sort of my dream back half of my career. And I was afraid that if I waited, I wouldn't get another shot at it. So I left that world a little sooner than I wanted to. Speaking at conferences, user groups, etc., helps too.
I think it's so awesome.
Was that trigger point?
Yeah. Yeah, so, go ahead, please.
So you were asking what the trigger point was for that. I was oddly paralyzed for a while, just kind of a freak neurological condition. And when I came back into the workforce, we had a bunch of newer developers, and I got to, you know, just really mentor them and invest in them and really help them out. And I loved it. So weird months of my life, but it wound up changing my career.
Yeah.
Because we hired them in my absence, partially because of my absence.
Well, I'm glad you're okay now.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Me too. Yeah.
You know, it's interesting, the things that happen to you or the paths you take that get you where you need to be, right? Or where you really want to be. I can't speak for Sean, but both of us have led other developers and have done training in certain facets. And I've found it to be one of the more enjoyable parts of my job. Now, don't get me wrong. I still want to code. I realized a long time ago that I don't really want to be a lead because you spend most of your time in meetings.
That's true.
But I really enjoy the mentoring part and being able to take a subject or a concept and boil it down to something that most people can grasp, right?
Yeah.
So
it's really,
I know Sean recently did. Yeah. Right. I know Sean recently did training on Angular, right? And you even did a whole video for your company, right?
Right, right. So, you know, trying to bring some .NET developers up to, you know, at least some level of familiarity with Angular. So maybe they're a back-end developer and they're writing, you know, web API stuff, but they have Angular guys on their team that are calling into their stuff, you know, train them on the front end so that at least they know, you know, what that person has to go through to build something and then call into their API.
So with your bootcamp, what is the mix of concept or just straight learning versus actually development for your students?
So for us, you know, the mornings are new instruction, right? We're giving them new instruction. They're participating in class by coding along in their IDE, which is really great because it gives them opportunities to make mistakes and see like, hey, I got a compiler error. What does this mean? And in a remote setting, it's awesome because they can just share their screen and we can take a look at it. In a classroom, it's similar, but you know, it's less teachable because you can't see other people's mistakes as easily. And then the afternoons are all here's a whole bunch of homework, go do it. And then, you know, periodically we'll give them some mini capstone projects where they're building something larger from a simple starting point with some clear requirements that don't change. That's important. And then the last 2 weeks of the program are just building a large application from scratch in an agile manner. We're actually doing that right now. And that's my favorite part of the program because you see these people at the very end of the program, they're demoing these beautiful sites that are sometimes better than something I could build as far as like what they look like and their usability and the like. And it's like, I remember you 14 weeks ago, you didn't know what a compiler was. And it's, you know, and then they leave you and you get the next class and you're sad, but yeah, you made a difference.
So you're not teaching in real life. The requirements don't change. What?
Well, they do in the final capsule.
You got,
we try to give them a taste of product managers. Or product
managers. I would say you got to cut them some slack, right? They're doing 14 weeks of accelerated learning. Don't throw them in the deep end just yet. Yeah. They'll get there soon enough. right? Their first job, they won't realize the requirements are going to change, you know, sometimes daily. So
after 14 weeks, what can somebody expect to be able to build and accomplish? And then what kind of a job would they fit into?
So our graduates are able to build an end-to-end application, full stack. So they're able to use a ASP.NET Core or Spring Boot server running Java or C#. And that's able to talk to a database. We do teach relational databases, SQL Server, Postgres. They're able to understand APIs and you know, the various verbs involved with RESTful APIs particularly. And they're able to write a JavaScript application that can communicate with that using a front-end framework. But more importantly, they know how all the pieces fit together. They know how to learn a new programming language, because a lot of our grads go off to do, you know, jobs that are not related to C# or Java. And they find, okay, well, how do I do this in Python? How do I, you know, what does this look like in Ruby? And so they see that the concepts they have learned in their languages aren't that different in other languages. And that's really cool.
Have you ever wondered if you could be offering a faster, less buggy experience for your customers? I mean, let's face it, the only way you're going to know that is by actually running it on production. So go figure it out, right? You run it on production, but you need something plugged in so that you can find out where those issues are, where it's slowing down, where it's having bugs. You need something like that there. And Raygun is awesome at this. They just added the performance monitoring, which is really slick, and it works like a breeze. I love it. It's like you get the ray gun and you zap the bugs. Anyway, definitely go check it out. It's going to save you a ton of time, a ton of money, a ton of sanity. I mean, let's face it, grepping through logs is no fun, and having people not able to tell you that it's too slow because they got sidetracked into Twitter is also not fun. So go check out Raygun. They are definitely going to help you out. There are thousands of customer-centric, customer-focused software companies who use Raygun every day to deliver great experiences for their customers. And if you go to Raygun and you use our link, you can get a 14-day free trial. So you can go check that out at adventuresin.net.com/Raygun.
So why did Tech Elevator choose Java and .NET and Vue as the languages or frameworks to teach your students? Was it because of the number of people using them or number of jobs available? Where's the reasoning there?
Apologies for the barking dog. My wife's
talking. Oh, you're good. You're fine. I have a 5-year-old in the background somewhere screaming. Yeah, so. Yeah.
So the reason why we choose most of what we choose is usually driven by the market in our areas. And we are constantly reevaluating our curriculum based on the needs of the people we interact with, right? So it's very market driven. And that's actually one of the advantages that a bootcamp has over a larger institution, is that we can change our curriculum and evolve it more fluidly. But they're not
all the same. That makes sense.
You know, so you have to do your research.
So there's good boot camps and there's bad boot camps out there. You know, how can somebody tell which one is good and which one's bad?
That is a softball question that I wish I had.
I love softball. Answer. I play it every summer.
So one of the things you can look at is something like graduation rates. You can look at placement rates. You can look at are they working as a developer? Or are they just working in a tech company? You can look at what percentage of students do they reject, you know? You can look at, hey, do they require all the money up front, or, you know, do they give you a way to pay halfway through for the other half or something like that? I would just talk to grads as well. Not all boot camps have, you know, experienced developers teaching either. You know, sometimes it's graduates. So you got to be careful. But again, I'm not a market expert in this. I'm just a guy who likes to code and to teach others.
So a lot of people might be thinking, you know, how much does a boot camp typically cost?
They vary in cost range. It's going to be anywhere from $12,000 to $20,000, something like that would be my guess.
For 3 to 4 months, yeah.
Right. Yeah.
That, but there's all. You know, I was going to say that's not unreasonable considering the time investment they're going to have to put in and what they're going to get out on the other end, right?
Yeah.
It's definitely a lot cheaper than college.
It is. Do some offer an option of, like, instead of paying upfront, you pay a percentage of wherever you get placed?
Yeah. So there are, I forget the acronym, I think it's IRR or something like that, where you can get, you can basically defer payment until you get placed and then get a portion of your salary for the next 2 to 5 years or something like that. There's also scholarships, et cetera, available often, financial aid available through skills funds and Sally Mae and things like that. But our admissions coordinators know a lot more than I do on that.
So if you're curious, contact Tech Elevator and they'll fill you in on all the details, right?
Yeah, techelevator.com. Our assessment tests and everything, a lot more accurate information than what I'm going to put out to you, because I'm the guy who helps you learn what a variable is.
What's so, a variable?
Well, it depends on what language you're using.
it does.
Something, another question popped into my head, because I'm not familiar with boot camps, learn a lot of good stuff here, right? Does the student get to choose the back end and the front end that they want to learn, or is it based on the instructor? How does that work?
So for us, we offer two tracks, right? You're either picking Java or C Sharp, and the student's in control of that. Sometimes there's a wait list for Java, and students might go to .NET just because it's open, or vice versa. But you always have the option of saying no, or hey, can I go to the next cohort? You know, we have a limited capacity, and that's based on our instructors' availability, but it's also based on what we think the market can handle, because we don't want to flood the market with more developers than they're going to want to hire, because that's bad for everybody.
So you're based in Columbus, and so you're basically feeding Ohio and the surrounding states.
My office is.
Okay.
We have five in-person campuses and a number of virtual communities. Our headquarters is actually in Cleveland.
Oh, okay. All right. Cool.
So why would somebody choose a boot camp over just watching a bunch of Pluralsight videos?
Sure. I love Pluralsight. I've actually been an author for them. I helped write the TypeScript assessment. They serve different needs. I think that there's a continuing education need for developers, you know, to use stuff like Pluralsight or Coursera or something like that. And I think it's really critical to keep current. The difference between something like Pluralsight and a college education or a bootcamp education is there's a number of them, right? First of all, you're not necessarily doing anything active, like any sort of active exercise of those skills. So I can watch a Pluralsight course on React, for example, and learn how to make a React app. I can learn all these concepts. I can take their assessment tests and see how good I am. And Pluralsight called me a React expert. This was before I'd written a line of React code, right? If I was to sit down and write a React app, and that's just because I knew a lot of JavaScript concepts, right? But if I was going to sit down and write a React application, it'd be a lot harder because I don't have the practice. I don't have the skill set, the skills built up. So it's not just the concepts. It's the, hey, I need to go through the exercise. I need to do it on my own. And when you need somebody, when you need like a set of exercises, you know, college and boot camps and, you know, more organized class like Coursera or something like that can help. If you are going to get stuck, if you're going to need people to answer questions, that's when you really need somebody who's experienced. You know, a lot of these courses can get out of date pretty quickly. And so you need context. You can have a lot of weird issues. You need help, right? And honestly, half or more of what I do in the first 4 weeks of the program is look at people and say, look, I know this is really hard. I believe you can do this. I've seen other people like you do this. Like, that's very hard to get from something that's pre-recorded. Right? Like, there's a really real connection going on. We're not just teaching, we are mentoring. And we're all doing, well, I think most of us are doing this. I haven't met anybody that this doesn't apply to. We're doing this because we want to stay involved with the students after they graduate, right? We want them to succeed. We want them to be placed. We want them to grow and evolve and learn new things and teach us new things.
You might know the pieces of the puzzle, but figuring out how to put them together, that's another thing.
Yeah. You're getting a tour guide as well as the tour and the skills associated with it.
How many people are usually in a class or a group 14-week boot camp students?
So for us in Columbus, we have usually three classes going on at once. And those classes will each have about 18 students in them. One main instructor behind that class, and then some support personnel associated with it too. So it's a decent ratio. You're not going to meet directly with your instructor every week, but probably every other week.
So just like college, you got a professor and you got TAs.
Well, right. unlike college, I only get one class at a time, right? So
yeah,
that's pretty
nice. Yeah.
Yeah, that simplifies things.
Yeah.
When it comes to your boot camp specifically, right? Sure. Not generalizing, what kind of learner do you find does well, right? And I'm not talking someone who has the aptitude or someone who has 60 hours a week to put into it, but, you know, visual learner versus rote learner versus someone who actually needs the hand-on work. Do you see one of those doing better than the other, or is it a mix?
As far as learning styles, I'm not certain, but I think the type of individual that gets the most out of Tech Elevator, for example, is somebody who's curious, somebody who's going to say, oh, well, the instructor taught me about this concept. I've been working on my project over here. Can I apply how do I rewrite my Blackjack application to use classes? You know, what could the file system help with? You know, okay, well, I now know about SQL statements. What can I build using this, like an aggregate query? Like, I now have more power. How do I apply that? And they go off and they experiment and they show it to you and they say, hey, what do you think? So somebody who's really engaged is going to really experiment with things and then ask questions of the technology and of you. That's the people who get the most out of it, because I and others like me are more than happy to answer Slack messages on the weekend or late at night and say, like, hey, I heard about Entity Framework. What can you tell me about that? You know, or how do I learn more about Blazor? You know,
I was going to say there's right? a lot there.
Yeah. It's basically, hey, what rabbit hole do you want to go down? Here's your tools. Show me what you build.
So in your camp, are you just teaching C# and the basic, you know, .NET core, or do you get into things like Entity Framework and things like Blazor?
Yeah, we talk about the various aspects of things. So .NET's broad, right? Like we're not building Win UI things. Like we're not building Win forms or anything. But we'll give them an overview of like the architecture. But the most important things are the programming concepts, because we're not trying to make C# or Java developers. We're trying to make developers who can learn under any platform. But I will always show them, like, hey, here's, you know, these JavaScript arrow functions. This is becoming more and more common, this kind of functional programming. Here's how you look at link. Here's how you work with the Entity Framework to work with your databases, right? Here's how you'd work with Dapper if you wanted to use that. You know, giving them options, giving them more information. We can't fit everything into a 14-week program. There's so many things I want to fit in, but you have to take things out, right? If you want to put more things in. And so we're trying to serve our community's needs and our individual's best chances at succeeding at whatever language they get into. As much as I want everybody to graduate and do C# or F# development for the rest of their lives, you know, I want them to succeed more.
So which one do you like better, C# or F#?
Yes.
Perfect answer. Perfect.
I want there to be more F# jobs. But
yeah,
I can pick which one of the two of my students are learning, it's going to be C#, because those are the people who are going to pay them right now.
Right. Yeah. Cool.
Other things. What have we not talked about that you typically want to let people know about learning how to be a developer?
Well, I think that it's really important to talk about not just becoming a developer, but staying a developer, because technology changes. We've been talking about it in this podcast. The technology keeps changing. You can get really good with a very narrow set of things, and those things can go away. I mean, I mentioned the Silverlight development, right? That goes away. Web forms, various types of things, they tend to die out and get replaced by other things. And so because of that, it's really important to keep learning and to keep finding new things, being aware of new things to dig into more deeply. One of you mentioned GraphQL. You know, that's not something I've been able to play with too much in a professional context yet. But that's one of those things that's like, oh, I really want to play with technology. I really want to learn this. And you know, I think continuing to do side projects, continuing to take Pluralsight courses or Coursera or something like that, you know, reading technical books. These are all really important things for a developer to do over the course of their career, just to maintain the skills that they have. Going to conferences or virtual conferences nowadays, but staying relevant, staying informed, keeping learning.
I do feel like the more frameworks and languages you're at least familiar with, the mm-hmm. better developer you are, because you can see different patterns and different approaches.
Yeah.
Like with C# and F#, right? They have different approaches. And yeah, I had mentioned GraphQL. I don't think I've mentioned this on the podcast yet, but I just started a new project. I was given the opportunity to switch something different. And so I'm in the process of learning Laravel and Vue and GraphQL. Mm. So it's interesting so far, right? I mean, there's a lot of it is syntax. But yeah, GraphQL is interesting. Why I loves it. We've talked about it several times on the podcast, but it's interesting to dive into new technology and see a different approach to solve the same problem.
Yeah. I think it's really important to keep it fun too, because your workday is not always going to be fun, right? You're going to be in slogs. You're going to be dealing with the same technologies year after year after year. And that may not be fun for you, depending on how you're built. Finding little ways of experimenting with things in side projects, in whatever you can do, is really beneficial for, I think, your mental health as a developer, your happiness as a developer. This cohort I've actually been shadowing in Java to sort of update my Java skill set, because last time I worked Java professionally was 2006. And so I have not gotten to code as much during the day because I'm not teaching the students. And so I've been keeping myself fresh and happy and occupied by revisiting Unity and game development in C#. And, you know, it's lots of little tinker projects. I think that sort of stuff, as silly as it sounds, is really important to just experimenting and growing as a developer, because you're never done, even for me after I stopped being a developer and became primarily an instructor.
I think most of the people that listen to our podcast enjoy what they do as a developer. But if you're not having fun and you don't enjoy it, this is the wrong industry. I'm putting that out there right now.
But thankfully, there's a lot of things besides just development, right? Like there's QA, there's developer analysts, there's management, there's DevOps. Yeah. You want a specific operational role. I mean, there's so many things in the technology field. Database.
Well, maybe I should specify career.
Yeah. Okay.
Don't become a developer for the money.
Yeah. I always tell people, you know, if you start out and you're still young, you know, you're looking at 40 years, you know, a lot's going to happen over a 40-year career in software development. So you make sure that it's something that you're going to say every day, I want to do that, rather than being something like, oh, got to go do that today. It's like, oh, yeah.
And you'll still have those days.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, that's the reason why you need to enjoy it and have fun in general, because you are going to have those days.
Yeah.
And you know, and I know people who don't enjoy their job, and it's a paycheck. And I feel blessed to enjoy what I do. But this would be a rough paycheck if I didn't enjoy it. So
how deep does bootcamp get? Does it get into something like solid design or the Gang of Four patterns or anything like that?
So we do teach the concept of design patterns. We don't go very much into depth, but, you know, we'll talk about command strategy, you know, a little bit singleton, things like that. I teach solid without teaching the acronym. Like, I'll teach the concepts of it, especially, you know, single responsibility principle. And then as we get closer to when the students are starting to look for jobs, I'll say, hey, oh, by the way, that stuff I was teaching you in module one, it fits into this acronym, you know. Because part of my job is to prepare them to represent themselves well in a technical interview. And it's like, hey, if you get this question, you already know this stuff. It's just under a different label, right? But we do code reviews over everything they do, too. Well, they're larger projects, like their capstones, their mini capstones. And so we push them to be better in a nurturing way, right? because it's really important. And I make it a policy to always make time for any student who wants to show me a side project, because A, I love it, and B, it's another opportunity to teach. And that's how you really start building those skills and stuff like solid and just figuring out, like, oh, I can't just pass 7 parameters around for every method. It starts to become unmaintainable. You know, we can teach these things, we can say these things, but until you get burned by them or see somebody who's been burned by them, it's hard for people to internalize that.
Yeah, I could just see, you know, day one. Okay, today we're going to learn the Liskov substitution principle. All right.
There you go. Right. By the way, right, I appreciate that you guys are mentoring them and pushing them in a positive way. Because even though you are called boot camps, you're nothing like military boot camps. At least I would hope not.
Yeah, I have a hat over there as a joke. My background, a little drill instructor hat. And my joke with the new classes is, I misunderstood what the program was when I signed up. But hey, you're stuck with me.
Yeah, somebody should come up with a better term for it than boot camp.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, I was in the Air Force, so I know what a military boot camp is. And at least in the Air Force, most of it is mind games. Mm. But yeah, they're there to put you down and rebuild you up in the image they want you to be in. So,
oh, we do that too. We call it JavaScript.
Oh, there you go.
Oh, it makes me think of Officer and a Gentleman.
You're showing your age, Sean. Mm-hmm.
I got nowhere else to go.
Yeah.
All right. Any last aspects or tidbits to give somebody that wants to get out there and get started? Otherwise, we'll move on to picks.
I think just play. You got to enjoy it. You know, it shouldn't just be a career. It can be a career, but I really want people to love what they do. You know.
Yep, I agree. Definitely agree.
Very cool.
Hey, folks, I don't know if you've noticed, but I've been working a lot on figuring out how to help people become the most valuable developers on their teams or becoming the top 5% of developers in the field. If you're looking to level up, figure out how to contribute more, get the career you want, get the career that you want that will support the lifestyle you want, then you should check out the Most Valuable Dev Summit. I've invited some of my friends across the community, people that you've heard of, people that have worked on systems that you use on a daily basis, people who have invented new ways of doing things over the years in programming, and I've asked them one question, and that question is, how do you become a top 5% developer? How do you become one in 20 of the best developers out there? And so we're going to go ahead and have that conversation with them in interviews on the Most Valuable Dev Summit, and you can find that at summit.mostvaluable.dev.
All right, let's move on to picks. Caleb, why don't you go first? What's your pick?
You know, I could take the easy road or easy way out and say Laravel or Vue or GraphQL, right? Because I'm deep into those right now. But Sean knows I like gadgets almost as much as he does. And a few weeks back, I actually picked up something called Homeband. It's a weird name, but it's actually like a headband that has flat microphones built into it that you can wear when you sleep. And I've got some subliminal stuff, which I know that most people are like, that stuff doesn't work. It works. Anyway, I've got some subliminal stuff that I can listen to and fall asleep to, you know, and it's not cumbersome. It doesn't get in the way. It's actually, I'd say it's 85-90% comfortable, right? So it's interesting technological test, so to speak.
All right. Well, I'll have to check that out, see what it's like. So I don't know about the subliminal stuff, but maybe the headband. So
I'm trying to become a better me, right? And the subliminal is going to do it.
What are you going to do to your kids?
He's going to be super duper awesome for the rest of his life. I'm going to make him the most positive, outgoing, and intellectually curious person on the face of the planet.
Sounds like a curse.
maybe.
All right. So my pick this week is a device I picked up. You know, it's been quite a while, maybe 6-9 months ago. But I don't know if you're like me, but I have 3 laptops and a desktop, and they're all, you know, the 3 laptops are all based upon what project or what client that I'm working for. They're all different. And then I have the personal desktop, and I didn't want to have 4 keyboards and 4 mice and things like that else. So I picked up a KVM, and the last time I looked out there weren't a lot of good choices for KVMs that I liked, but I did find this one. It's by a company called TE Smart. And the thing I like about it is that it has support for what's called EDID. And that means when you switch between devices, the devices don't think that those things got disconnected, like the monitors. So when you switch back to that device, all the windows didn't get moved back to you know, one screen, especially if you've got multiple screens. So the one that I have right now supports four inputs and only one output, which is fine because I've got the laptop screen as one, and then the one that goes out to the KVM is the other monitor. So that's fine for me. And they're supposed to be coming out with a new version that actually has four inputs and two outputs, which I may look into that once it comes out. But this one is actually really affordable. It does 4K at 60 Hertz, which is another thing that was important to me. And I can just run the cables from the USB-C port on my laptops into the switch, and then it goes HDMI out to the monitors. So works real well for me. It does have some compatibility charts on the website, depending on which keyboard and mouse that you have. So sometimes you can use the keyboard to switch between the inputs. But if you have a gaming keyboard that has macros and special things, then you often have to go into the direct USB port on the device rather than its special, you know, mouse port that looks for those keystrokes. So, but if you want to hook up multiple devices to one or more monitors, check out this website.
I find that is one of the biggest downsides to having multiple monitors is your windows not staying in the right spot, shifting.
Yeah, yeah. It used to be really hard to find an affordable KVM that supported that EDID where the things don't move around. So this company came out with something, and I jumped on it.
That's cool.
All right, Matt, what do you have for a pick?
Well, old book by an author who's no longer with us, but if you like thrillers and science fiction, Michael Crichton's Sphere is probably my favorite book of all time. A science fiction book takes place on the surface or on the bottom of the ocean, and can't talk too much about what it's actually about without giving away the plot. But really my favorite book of all time, just a wonderful science fiction psychological thriller. They did make a movie of it eventually, had a pretty good cast, but it just didn't work. So if you love the book, watch the movie eventually, but don't expect it to be amazing.
I have not read the book, but I've seen the movie. And
I'm so sorry.
I understand what you're saying.
But yeah, it's a Michael Crichton Sphere. I love that book.
Cool.
All right. So Matt, if people have questions, they want to learn more about either Tech Elevator or learning in general and getting into the development career, how can they get in touch with you?
The best way of getting in touch with me is probably via Twitter. Just follow me there. I'm at IntegerMan there. But you can also email me at matt.eland@techelevator.com, and I'll be happy to answer. You can also send me a LinkedIn request as well, but please put a note in there just kind of how you found about me, because I don't always accept those or don't always understand the context when they come my way.
Right.
Yeah. Awesome. And if our listeners want to reach out to the show, we'd love to hear from you. We want to know how we're doing, but and get your feedback so they can reach out to me. I'm on Twitter at .net. No, it is Friday.
Yeah.
It's Friday over.
At .net superhero. Dun, da, da, da. There we go.
Thanks, Caleb.
You're welcome. And
Caleb is at Caleb. At Caleb Rhodes.
Yes, sir. See? We just switched. There we go. That worked.
Yeah. All right. Cool, thanks, cool. Guys. Great show. Thanks.
Yeah.
And we'll catch everybody on the next episode of Adventures in .net.
Bye, y'all.
Bandwidth for this segment is provided by CacheFly, the world's fastest CDN. Deliver your content fast with CacheFly. Visit CacheFly.com to learn more.